Hello, what is up, podcast? Welcome to the Insight Show. This is your host Shreyas, along with
Hi guys, I'm Ehsas.
Ehsas Sharma from IIT Roper. So today we have an amazing guest, Mr. Shriram Prasad, who has passed out from the 2008 IIT Roper batch.
So like this amazing personality has seen it all. He has been IITian first and foremost. Then he was an IME grad. Then he became an entrepreneur, and now he's an associate. So like he has seen everything, all the walks of life, all the perspectives of life. And adding to it, he's 100% Tyler in CAT 2012. So like that's a big achievement for all of us. Like most of the people in fourth year are trying to like get a 99.5 plus at least to get into IIM ABC. And we have with us a person who has scored 100. So we hope that this podcast will help all you guys who are tuning in to the Insight Show to get a perspective of what it takes to actually get the 100% Tyler, what it takes to actually get a good MBA, and what is the life after you get an MBA, right?
Exactly.
So hi, Shriram.
Hello, sir. How are you doing?
Hi Shreyas, hi Ehsas. Good, I'm doing good. How are you guys doing?
Yeah, really excellent. Lovely. Yeah,
excellent.
Yeah. You can call me Shriram, and thanks for the introduction. And I think Ehsas has told that I have seen it all. That seems to make me sound like I'm probably older than I actually am. I haven't seen much. I do have probably a little bit more experience than what probably you guys currently in college might be having. But clearly, I have not seen it all, and I'll be happy to share whatever my experiences are, and hope we have a great, fun conversation.
Just before diving into your entire journey, I'd like to take it back a little bit before the IIT days. Can you tell us why you thought joining an IIT was a good decision? Why? How did you choose IIT Roper? Why did you think engineering was for you? And just tell us about that part of your journey.
Okay, so there's not much decision making that was involved in going to IIT. It is typical small town Indian middle class mentality that the boy is studying well, so he must be pushed into IIT. So you put him in a coaching center. And yes, I continued to do well in the coaching center and ended up getting a rank, whatever I got. And I had opportunities from other engineering colleges as well, because you write many entrances, including IITP and BITS and etc. And at that point in time, there was not much thought put into this. It was basically, you can say, what your neighbors talked and what your peers talked and etc. I think I heard your podcast with Digvijay. He said somewhere that IIT is IIT, and hence we went to IIT Roper because that was the best opportunity available but for the given rank. I think it was very similar for me as well. Not much thought, not much thinking. It's purely at that point in time, purely for lack of a better word, for the brand you went in. And as far as why engineering, why IIT Roper and etc., frankly, there is not much thought put into it. Everybody around me was doing, so that is why I did it.
So like, how was your life at IIT Roper? You were the first batch. So of course, there were no clubs, no fest like Zeitgeist and whatever technical fest we have today. So what did you do in your free time, or what did you do as an extracurricular activity apart from academics as such?
Yeah, so the first year was in IIT Delhi. That was partly one reason why we chose IIT Roper. We thought, they say first year, but as with any government-run institutions, the 1 year will extend to 4 years is what we initially thought. We said, fine, we'll continue and have the 4 years at IIT Delhi. These guys start off saying 1 year, but it'll end up for 4 years is the precise reason why we chose IIT Roper, because it was IIT Delhi and not other IITs. Even within the IIT, even we had other options. So the first year was in IIT Delhi, and initially there we were about 120 odd people. For me personally, it was a geographical and culturally very different place to where I belong. So it was a nice experience getting used to, a culture which is far different from where I come from. So it's very amusing that, on the first day when my parents came along with me to get me into my hostel room, my roommate touched their feet, which seemed very amusing as to why is this person touching feet of unknown people. So then I came to know, okay, this is part of the culture in the north and etc. Yeah, like you rightly said, we were not having too many clubs, we were not having any established setup and etc. But I think what was good about our batch was that no one waited for someone to say that this is the setup and you should now live with the setup. For example, what was I interested in? I was very interested in cricket and I was very interested in movies. So because we did not have cricket, we said, okay, who all play cricket? And we started playing cricket. Now that particular small cricket tournament became, we did the inter-department competition. Then we did what is called, I don't know what it is called, but it's called something like modeled on the Indian Premier League. That was very early at that time. IPL was in 2008. We modeled a tournament on that. And we, I'm not sure if this still continues in IIT Roper, but until we were there, it continued. So, and a lot of people, some who had interested in music, started doing music stuff. Some people who were interested in other sports started doing other stuff. So they, basically people built what they wanted, even if it was not there. So that was how the college got built. Some people were interested in cultural stuff. They said we needed a cultural stuff for our college when we have a premises of our own and etc. So it's basically, it is not there, but I want it. So what do I do so that I have this particular facility? So some people were interested in the gym. So they set up the gym when we eventually moved to the new campus. So that is how it all got built at the institute. So yeah. Initially, we were slightly apprehensive that, oh, we don't have all these facilities, these big IITs have, how will we end up? But I think the fact that we didn't have those facilities, we had to make our own stuff. And that is how I think leaders emerged and people who began to lead to take up initiative and etc. So I think that is what probably was a great opportunity, I would say. It is probably better than having to follow a established tradition and protocol and etc. So, yeah, I would see it as an opportunity, not having many of these facilities, which it was not such a setback, come to think of it now.
So, like you said, that the facilities that were provided were actually not hindered what you wanted to do, or like all of your batchmates were so motivated to start something, to initiate all those stuff. But other than that, one very important thing that is very like detrimental or deterministic to a student's life as an engineer is the presence of seniors. So like for us, right, for any batch, seniors are like a guide, seniors is a mentor, senior is a good friend who will help you in whatever you want to do and try to guide you into whatever you want to achieve, right? So you did not have any seniors. How big a role it played that you didn't have any seniors? Did it affect you when eventually you went into IMA and you got to know what seniors are like? So like how was not having seniors good or bad for you as a professional?
So I would answer this in two ways. One thing is you always have the benefit of hindsight. Like one, what you were thinking when you were in that particular situation is different from come to think of it now. Did it actually help you or not help you? Two different answers. So for me personally, yes, I thought if I had a few seniors back then, I would have done things differently. But did it make a whole lot of a difference to where I ended up and what I will eventually be 10, 20 years down the line? I don't think so. So essentially, think of it this way, that the time you spend in IIT or IIM or etc. is probably 4 years and 2 years and etc. And you are probably, if you do MBA back to back after engineering, you're probably 24 by the time you leave out of the campus and college. And that is hardly, there is still probably 36, 40 years of work life ahead of you. When there is 40 years of work life ahead of you, you can make up whatever you lagged in those 5, 6 years somewhere during the time. And eventually where you'll end up will not be dependent too much on what kind of advice you got in those 6 years, because you can always make up. The fact that I didn't have seniors, I think I could have done things a bit differently, but it did not make a whole lot of a difference to, you know, where I will end up being or etc. Because what we fail to see is that particular period is only a very small part of your entire work career. It's 40 years, 45 years. So what you lack, you'll make up. Okay, some people might get that opportunity at 24 because you didn't have that experience. You'll probably get it at 28, 29. But I think in the long run, those 5 years, you can always make up with your other aspects like your hard work or talent or skill and etc. It did not make a much difference to where I ended up or where I will end up in the near future. But if they were there, I would have done probably some things differently, got to where I was slightly ahead. I do feel that, but I don't think it's a huge thing in the larger scheme of things. And for me personally, even at IMA, I did have seniors. I did not take too much of an interaction from them because I was always a person of my own thinking and etc. Whatever appealed to me, I did, in spite of what seniors said or juniors said or peers said. So when, and that is the kind of person I personally was. I felt comfortable taking my own decisions, with taking inputs from people, but not relying on their decisions. For other people, it might be different. But for me personally, it did not matter all that much. Maybe lost a 2 years here and there, but I think I can make it up in the future.
Right. So I've seen your academic credentials and I've seen that you've been a topper for like all your life. You've scored very good in the 10th standard. You're amazing in the 12th standard. You've come to an IIT. Then we already know that you've cleared CAT and done so much. So how was academics at IIT Ropard and how were you already so genius at academics?
No, I think school and all, it's not like I studied a hell lot or anything of that sort. It basically, some things come intuitively to people because, for example, when you had to memorize some stuff, I think I'm fairly good at memorizing stuff and that is what is required to clear your exams with good marks in your 10th and 12th. It does not require a lot of knowledge or wisdom or anything of that sort. So basically, I felt I had the necessary skills to be able to do well in those exams. That does not say anything about my being wise or me being not wise or me being a genius or me not being a genius. It is what I call an examination temperament and that I had to clear that CBSE and AP State Board in the 12th. And getting high marks in AP State Board is no such big deal. I think a lot of people do get high marks in the AP State Board. So yeah, I would say I did have the examination temperament. Genius or not, I think that's a very relative thing. Because I can feel dumb one fine day and think that, you know, I know nothing. And the next moment, I feel you solve a problem or something and you can feel that nobody else is as intelligent as me. So you go through this, you go through these highs and lows. The lows that, oh, how do I not see this thing when everybody in the class did? And how come nobody in the class saw something I saw? So that whole phase of genius or not genius, I think everybody goes through those phases. There's a highs and lows when you prepare for IIT or in IIM and etc. So I think one should not take those tags too seriously.
How do you feel about being an alumni of IIT Roorkee as a whole?
Yeah, I have a slightly different take on this to what most people might have. I think we get consumed a lot in terms of what value IIT can add to us as individuals. It does add a lot of value because it is easy for a person to say, oh, you're from IIT or you're from IIM and etc. But I think that is as far as the advantage stops. As in, once they know you're from a particular thing, that gives you access, that probably gives you some interview calls which you would otherwise have a very difficult time in getting across to these people and etc. So I think that brand and etc. gives you access and etc. And I think one should always use it to their advantage. But what I see a lot of alumni and etc. is that they take immense pride in, you know, I am from IIT, I am from IIM, and they wear it on their sleeve, you see, that, you know, you kind of, hey, I'm from IIT, so I'm more intelligent than you, or I'm from IIM, I'm more intelligent than you. I think that is utter bullshit crap. Nothing can be farther from the truth. I have seen people from IITs probably with ranks much better than mine and etc. who are extremely dumb as compared to me. And I've seen people with far lower CGPAs than me, some obscure colleges in some regional parts of the country, and who did not ever make it to IITs or IIMs and etc., who I thought were much more sharper than I ever was. So while it is good to take advantage of the brand which inherently has in the scheme of things, it's okay. It's okay to leverage that to your advantage. While these tags can be used to your advantage and one should use it to your advantage, let us not get consumed by drinking our own Kool-Aid and saying that I have arrived after passing out of IIT or after passing out of IIM and this is it. Because the world is changing very rapidly and all you need today to compete with your neighbor is the internet. As in, if someone is not going to IIT or IIM, he can still attend the same lectures or probably get similar teaching. And you should be aware of the fact that these tags only get you somewhere. They are not the by all means the end of it and end of it. And even the tags like, you know, CGPAs of 9s and 8s and etc. I for sure know that I am not a very good electrical engineer, but my CGPA is whatever, 8.57 or 8.6, whatever it is. And the reason why I was able to get 8.6 is not because I was great at electrical engineering, but I knew how to do well in exams. By that, what I mean is that And the reason why I actually went to about doing CAT is I felt I did not have the intuitive feel towards engineering. Now, one might ask, okay, if you are not good at electrical engineering, how could you get 8.6 CGPA in? What I felt was that I always thought about electrical engineering or anything in terms of mathematics. And I was good at maths. So, for example, if you show me a circuit which is connected in a particular way and et cetera, I will not be immediately be able to say it will be a very high current flowing through it or a very low current. I would have to draw the circuit on this thing and I have to get the formula behind it. And that is how I understood, oh, this is high, this is low. Now, if you show the same circuit to a lab technician who probably did ITI, he'll be immediately able to see the circuit board and be able to tell you, no, you'll end up blowing the board or no, you'll end up shorting the circuit and et cetera. That is the point, and this incident actually happened to me, that I realized that I was thinking of engineering in terms of math. I was not thinking in terms of I was not having an intuitive feel towards engineering. So, which is why I said I will not do engineering and I'll do something else. But the point I'm trying to make is, just because you get a good CGPA in something or just because you do well in something academically, that is not indicator of how good you are at the subject. You could ace an exam well through examination temperament as well, and etc. So, the point I'm trying to make is, let us not take these academic credentials and etc. too seriously and give them much more importance than they actually deserve. Because for a person who wants to learn something, the world is at his feet today, and the person working hard will eventually win over you in the long run. Because, and I'm saying this because the race you are running with is not with your neighbor on campus placement day. The race you are running is a 60-year race until for your whole work life, and you have to keep upgrading yourself all the time. So let us not get consumed by, oh, who got the McKinsey placement offer on day zero? Am I getting on day one? Am I getting 15 lakhs or am I getting 20 lakhs? Am I getting 25 lakhs? So these might appear important today to a lot of people in terms of how they want society to perceive them, whether they have to be seen as success or failures in the eyes of peers, parents, teachers, and etc. But I think it is okay to chill out and look at it as a long marathon of 65 years of life you are running, and you're not optimizing for a placement offer or a particular CAT exam on a particular day and etc.
But yes, okay. Can you tell us how exactly you decided to prepare for CAT, and when did you start preparing for it?
Yeah, so the actual trigger was this incident. Like I told you, the lab technician told me you'll end up burning the circuit. And that got me thinking as to how there was that hint of pride back then. I'm an IITian, I'm an 8-point whatever. So, and this guy probably did his ITI. How does he know that I'm not? Then I began to analyze myself. What does this mean? That means I'm thinking of the subject in terms of math. I don't understand how it actually works. It is always reducing the whole physical effect to a formula is how I understood it. And I felt that was not intuitive. And I believe in order to be, I wouldn't say be successful. Successful is a wrong word. In order to enjoy something, you need to have an intuitive understanding towards it. It should feel like I know this stuff. So I didn't have that kind of a skill set when it came to electrical engineering. So that is when I did my analysis or introspection and said, okay, what is it that I truly like doing? Okay, I like analysis. I like to analyze situations and environments and stuff and decide, say, what is happening. So what is the best fit for a guy who is looking at environment around him and trying to size up things and take a call on what is it going to be? It seems business is something that is closely related in the academic field to what I was describing. So I said, okay, fine, let us write CAT and etc. And I think this was sometime during the last phase of third year. I said, okay, fine, we'll write CAT. And that is how I started preparing for CAT. That was the actual trigger, that incident with the lab technician.
The most of the students logging on to tuning into our podcast today really want to know what it takes to get 100 percentile in CAT. CAT is there in a month or so, right? The CAT is there on 24th November. So almost all the students right now must have finished their preparation. They must be giving all the mocks every week, analyzing their percentiles, analyzing their ranks and MCATs and all that stuff. So what actually takes it to like increase your percentile from say 99.3 to 99.8 or 100 percentile? Like what is that basic difference that you feel, if it is there, of course, if it if there is a difference between 99.2 and 100, what is it?
I personally think if I have to analyze people I see around me and my own history with taking mock cats and etc. From 99 to 99.5 is probably your intelligence and your basic analytical skill and how fast you can do. From 99.5 to 100 is your luck on that particular day. Okay. That is what it is. I mean, if will I get a 100 if I write it again? I probably don't know. Probably may not get it.
Yeah.
So it's dependent on a lot of factors, including luck. And I never got the 100 and, for example, I never got a 100 percentile in any of the mock cats I wrote until then. So to be able to say, oh no, I knew it, I'll get a 100 and all is bullshit crap. So I knew I did well, but to getting a 100, I think there is an element of luck on that particular day. I can share with you what I thought worked for me. So when I was thinking that I'll prepare for CAT, many of my peers and etc. actually got into these coaching classes. They said, we'll go to the weekend coaching classes and do stuff and prepare for CAT. I felt that was not necessary because what is there in CAT, it is basically your 10th class math and some basic English that is there. Now, ratios and proportions and speeds and times and etc. can these be taught? You already know it, right? I mean, if you have a basic level of intelligence, I don't think the concept is an issue. What I personally thought was I did not require to know how to calculate ratios and anything from any of these coaching classes and etc. What I thought was I required an examination temperament so that when you take a lot of exams, the actual exam also will be like one of those mock and you will go and end up writing it. So it is important to get into the scheme of things. So for that 3-4 month period before the actual CAT, I think in about a period of 100 days, I would have given about 200 mock papers from wherever I could get, some free, some stolen, some someone took a test and I used to get that paper and etc. Through whatever sources, I gave 200 marks, sometimes crazily 3 papers a day, 4 papers a day, etc. So I gave so many papers, that the actual CAT seemed like or mock paper. So I think what worked for me was giving so many papers. What it does is, when you give so many papers, I think it's not that I had this intuition and that is geniusly how I thought of this strategy. But I think what helped me was that when you use so many papers, right? Every question format you would have encountered somewhere or the other. And in case where you did not know the answer or where you could not find the answer in the right amount of time, when you eventually look at solutions, you know, okay, oh, if this is presented in this form, this is the shortcut I can use to eventually be able to do it. So it is basically when you give a lot of these papers, what happens is you know all the kind of patterns of questions that are asked. And if a question is in this pattern, how do you directly go to a particular method so that you stop wasting time? So it is essentially, I think what worked for me apart from luck was the fact that all these patterns somewhere down the line, that pattern recognition was there. So I didn't waste any time in that question. And that I think helped on the exam day. That is what it was. So I think if you think you need coaching, well, go ahead and do it. But what I feel is most times how we take decisions is, oh, the other guy is taking coaching, so I'll also take coaching. The other guy took time, I'll also take time. The other guy took something, I'll also do something.
Yeah.
So I think we should give respect to our intelligence much more than we actually give. So think, what is it that I need? For this need, is coaching class the right fit? Is mock cat the right fit? Or something else the right fit? That analysis each person should be able to do for himself and decide what is good for him. To be blindly following others saying that, maybe join karunga, and etc. I think that is lack of respect to your own intelligence.
For most people, there's a major misconception that CAT is everything, but CAT is only like 30% of what it takes to get an admission into IIM ABC, right? So you have the interview. Correct. And you have to get a call from the IIMs and all. Correct. That stuff. So most people actually get scared that they don't have a good CGPA, say they have a CGPA below 7, or they don't have a lot of extracurricular activities as such. So how do you think the calling process takes place, and what do you think should be an at least the minimum amount of credentials that you should have if you want to say apply for IIM ABC or LIK at the most? Like most people say, for example, an IIT would only like to go to ABC and LIK. So what would be a suggestion, or what would you ask those students to do as a minimum credential kind of a thing?
I think the all, I'm not sure of what the criteria is today, but back then the criteria was that if you want to get, I think, ABC or one of these calls, that minimum CGPA of 8 should be there or something, if I'm correct. I'm not sure what it is today. Or the math worked in such a way that unless you had an 8 CGPA, it was extremely tough for you to get in. Apart from that, see, for example, I'll state this, I mean, not in the context of this question, but another question, that I never did any activity in my life with the intention that it will be useful somewhere down the line. I never did that. For example, if I played cricket, I played cricket because I enjoyed playing cricket. If I wrote CAT, it is because I thought I'll enjoy doing this. Now, there could be a lot many opportunities. Oh, we'll go to this competition. We'll go and do this cultural fest and etc. My, I wouldn't say suggestion. It's anyone's decision as to what they want to do. But I personally did things only I liked, irrespective of whether where it will take me in my career or where it will not. I didn't have too much of thinking behind my decisions in life. So if you see my extracurriculars or something, they are nothing out of the box or anything of that sort. It's fairly standard. I did what I enjoyed doing, and that is what I put in my CV. I did not think about the consequences that, you know, will this, if is having this CV, is it enough to get into IIM, B or C and etc. I frankly didn't think of all these things, because I thought more than being successful, it is important to be happy. And I always did things that made me happy. It eventually worked out well in the end. But even if I did not get into IIM because I lacked something I would not have enjoyed doing, I thought that was fine. I think that is a consequence I'm willing to face. So that is what it is. And the fact that you don't have these extracurriculars, will it be a big hindrance in your IIMA selection process? I wouldn't think so. Because I think what the panels and etc. are looking at when they interview your group discussion is, I'm not sure of what is the process today, but back then we had a group discussion and an interview. Group discussion as to whether you are able to put your point across with minimal fuss and with clarity as to what you want to put. Are you being overly aggressive? Are you being overly passive? Essentially, can you speak and make yourself heard is what the group discussion is about. And I don't think they're looking for which side of the opinion you're on. It's basically, can you present what you think is right in an effective manner? Interviews also the same thing. My strategy with the interview has been to always be honest. Whether it'll get you the selection, whether you'll not get the selection, that is secondary. But I think when you're honest, the words you speak will come out with conviction. And I think that conviction was the most important thing, because when you're trying to bluff or when you're trying to lie and all, these panels are experienced enough to see through your bluff. So whether it will help you get the selection or not is the secondary question. But at least I should be honest and have conviction in my reply is what I thought. And that is how I did. And I eventually ended up doing well in almost all the interviews I gave. So my suggestion is to be truthful to the maximum extent possible and to have conviction in what you say. Tell for things which you know, you say, I know, and this is what I think. For things you do not know, you say, I do not know this. And see where it takes you. That's all. I think that is all the thing there is in your hand. And at least that is the strategy I followed, frankly speaking.
So can you tell us about your IIM Ahmedabad life, and how is it different from IIT Roorkee?
So I think engineering is one discipline where you require a person more experienced to be able to tell you that this is what it is and that is how you learn. But in IIM, it's basic business, right? Business is common sense at the end of the day. You learn a lot from common sense of other people. I think IIM that way, a lot of it is peer learning. You learn from your friends and your classmates, because most of the pedagogy of teaching is through group discussion, classroom discussion and etc., case studies and etc. It's a lot of discussion. It's not one person drilling down saying that this is the fact that you have to note down or anything of that sort. And frankly, at the end of 2 years, I had this question that as to what is it that I learned from IMA? And it is difficult to put a word to it. For example, in engineering, you can say, I learned coding, I learned how machines work or some. So you can be very specific with respect to the subject areas. But in this thing, what is it that I learned in 2 years? It's very difficult to put a word. All I understood at the end of 2 years is, okay, I knew how to listen to people. I knew how to put my opinion across. I knew how to think logically. And then when you ask yourself a question, okay, did you need to go to IMA to be able to do that? Probably not. But what IMA is, because I went to that college, but what business school tries to do is that what you would have probably taken 10 years to figure out by doing it in the outside world, it is a kind of concentrated experience given to you in 2 years' time. Mm-hmm. So it is just a fastened process. It's not something you could not have learned on your own in the outside world. It is just that to face all these experiences and assimilate the learnings, it would have probably taken much longer than 2 years' time. So I would call IMA accelerated life learning is what I would call it. It's not that people who did not go to IMA cannot be great at doing what I do or somebody else does. It is just accelerated is what I would say. But it was a great experience because I experienced the joy of learning. I learned something. I cannot put and point out what it was, but I did. I find that I myself have changed post the 2 years stint.
Sriram, now we'll move on to like your career, right? So after IMA, as we scroll through your LinkedIn profile, we see you joined Nestle as a management trainee. While simultaneously, you were also like doing your own startup and doing your own stuff. So as a person or as for the people who will be tuning into this and who are like budding entrepreneurs at this point of time. So for them, actually, how did you think about this idea, or like when did you think about this idea and thought that, yes, I should start a startup, and what eventually went into starting it altogether, right?
Actually, when I joined Nestle, I did not have a clear, at no point in time in life, actually, I had a clear understanding of what I wanted to do next. Even now, I do not have a clear understanding of what I wanted to do next. So one thing I would want to say is that it is okay to have that, you know, hazy outlook as to what it is that I want to do next. It's not a bad state to be in. It's not a gone case to be in that state, because many people are. And many people who have think they have all figured out haven't yet figured out. So it is okay to be there. All you need is to be able to have the courage to be able to say, okay, I'll wait through this period for 2 years and I know how to manage my board. You can only look so far onto the horizon. You cannot look at what is behind. So it is okay to be that hazy state. But coming to the Nestle question you asked about, frankly, again, I was too lazy to be applying to the jobs I liked or anything of that sort at that point in time. And frankly, the whole concept of work-life balance or work satisfaction did not make sense to me, because I have never worked in the past. So it all seemed like, oh, what is this work satisfaction they are talking of? They pay you money and you work, and that is the kind of a business transaction it is. And so I still fully did not understand the extent of, you know, I'll only do this particular job and etc. So I said, okay, fine, let us explore. Let us see what works and what sticks and etc. So I took the job out of campus of Nestle. I had an offer with Nestle. And when I went to Nestle, it was a great learning experience for 6 months, because I understood how goods moved from factory to FMCG, and how the whole distribution and retail chains worked, and how were people able to make 1 rupee chocolates and still make money. So that all seemed fascinating. But then I realized after the 6 month period, now this particular job will happen in circles. It will happen in months. There is a month, there is a target, you achieve the target, there is a next month in which this whole cycle will repeat itself all over again. So that did not seem all that too exciting for me. Okay, I learned, I had a good time, 6 months time, but this is not something I would want to do every day. So then I first quit that job. I did not have a follow-up as to what I'll do. But I said, okay, it is always good to have a safety net, and you'll get, you know, complacent with your own life and work, because as they say, salary is the biggest addiction. So I did not want to get into that addiction. So I said, if you quit, then you'll probably figure out something and move on. So I quit, and at that particular point in time, this whole I and my friend used to discuss various startup ideas. One of the startup ideas we discussed was, I wouldn't say it is revolutionary, disruptive, or anything of that sort, like people say today. It's a fairly simple idea. We felt that the thesis behind our startup was essentially, it was about trading used electronics. And what we felt was, especially mobile phones and electronics, the cycle times were falling. For example, a mobile phone you used to use for 4 years, 5 years before that, now you are changing every 6 months and etc. What that means is that a lot of these mobile phones will go into the second-hand market very rapidly. And when they go into the second-hand market very rapidly, these phones or electronic gadgets are not fully used up. There is still a lot of useful life left in them. And we also felt that a lot of India wants to get these access to branded phones and etc., but they would not want to pay full cost. So second-hand is a good market. So we can connect these buyers and sellers is what we thought, and we set up the business. We did quite well. We wanted to raise about 3 crores initially, and we did have an offer for 3 crores, but the funder wanted us to change our business model. Mm-hmm. And we felt the funder wanted to change our business model because, again, there are two things here. One, we are trying to build a business and the business is for the customers. Whereas the VC guy is looking to build a business where he wants to sell and exist to the next guy. So the dynamics of this thing is slightly different. One is in it for the long run, one is trying to flip it. So there is a conflict of what model works. Now, the model which he wanted us to work on, we were not comfortable because we felt it can create a lot of transactions in the short term, but it was not sustainable. And we did not want to be doing unsustainable businesses just because somebody was giving a value and a valuation to it and you can get a salary out of it. Because I wanted to do a business that is self-sustaining with or without the funding. It should self-sustain on its own. So we said, no, just because you are giving us money, we will not be changing our model because we did not find it to be sustainable. And eventually what happened is the funding didn't come our way and our personal savings dried up and we exhausted all our savings. And at that point in time, what I and my partner had in our mind was to take that money and do whatever he said was doing and figure it out later. We shut down this business. And we said we'll shut down this business because we do not want to do things we know or we think will not work just because somebody is giving us money. So that is why we shut this business. And each of us moved our ways. And I joined Oyo because it was a startup and it was growing back then. So I thought, okay, let us explore what we want to let us explore how they build startups and see if we had done anything drastically wrong in the way we built our previous startup. It will be a good learning. So I did that for 2 years. And it was a great place to be because you have all these people who are having quite a good pedigree, and Oyo grew the way it did just because of its people. So the people were all great. So it was a great working experience for 2 years. But I personally again felt that this was a business being done for the venture model sake, and I felt it was not sustainable. And when I feel something is not sustainable, I do not want to be a part of it. That is when I quit Oyo again. And I felt, okay, this has been going on for long. Nestle, I learned something, I jumped. Startup, I did something, it did not work, I jumped. Oyo, I did something, I did not like something, I jumped. So how long will I be galloping is the question I asked myself, because I was at a particular age where I felt I should narrow down on my interests. I cannot be hopping on from one thing to the other. Which is when I said, okay, fine, let us do this whole analysis all over again, which I did back in engineering when that whole lab assistant thing was there, lab technician thing was there. So I said, what am I good at? I'm good at analysis and etc. is again the same answer I got. And I felt I always had a knack for finance. Now, if many people ask me, okay, if you feel you have a knack for finance, why didn't you join finance at the end of college? That's a good question. The answer is pure lethargy. I thought we'll figure it out later. And I felt, I felt work satisfaction and all seemed bullshit at that point in time. But after working in 3 different companies, one of which is my own, I felt work satisfaction is all that there is irrespective of how much money they pay you or don't pay you. So I said, okay, fine, finance is where I want to get into. And I started writing to every company that had capital in its name. Any company that had capital in its name, I wrote. I started writing to them saying that I am so and so. I passed out of IMA in 2014. It's been 4 years since I passed out. I absolutely have no financial services experience, but I'm good at finance because I did well in my finance courses and etc. And you have to trust me basically because I say so, and you have to give me a job. That is my exact letter I wrote. Most people did not reply. The ones who replied said, don't you think you're being too rude in this way asking for a job and etc. But somewhere I felt, sir, please give me a job. Nobody will even reply. There is something that should be there in that letter or that I read that at least attracts a reaction, positive or negative, at least get noticed. A lot of people didn't respond. Some people said, this is not the way you ask. But all you require is that one person to say, okay, come and talk to me.
Yeah.
So, I mean, what I understood from that thing is that in many places where you're afraid of something, right, writing a letter or approaching someone and etc., the fear of failure is only perceived. There is actually nothing you lose if you fail. Why did you write me a letter? He'll get lost. Adverse, he'll get lost or something of that sort. So many people I see, not just in applying for jobs or something, are yaar, ye nahi hua to, ye job nahi mila to, and etc. So there's one thing, the probability of failure and the impact due to a failure. There might be a very high probability of failure in many of these, but the impact due to failure is very less. It's not like you'll go on road begging, or it's not like you'll not have a job, or it's not. So most times what people do is they say, oh, the probability of failure here is very high, so I'll not do it. But what is most important is, okay, if you fail, what is the impact that will have on you? That is most cases negligible. And when cases where the impact of a failure is very negligible, I think in spite of probability being high, you should go for it and do it. Because like I said, in my case, all you required was one person to say, okay, come and talk to me. And finally, some 3-4 people told, come and talk to me. Eventually, 3 people said no, 1 person said yes. And that is all there is required, right? So I went. So most times, most people in college and etc., even I suffered from the same thing. It's not like I am this whole, Buddha who has all figured out it all along. But it's basically, come to think of it, I realize most times we fear the probability of failure, but impact of failure is very less in most of the things we do. It's not like if you fail a particular exam or if you take a tough course or something, your CGPA will go down and etc. So it, again, like I said, in the 60 years of your work life, these will not even seem to be that big things that mattered. So in the larger scheme of things, if you think these do not matter, you should take that risk. If the impact of failure is low, the negatives, downside of the failure is low, you should take this. Don't be too bothered by, oh, I'll take this course because this will give me a high grade. Oh, I'll take this course because this will improve my CGPA and all. Always try to do courses that will help you. If you enjoy that course, if you want to do it, you should go ahead and do it, is my suggestion. Whether it will lead to success or failure, nobody will be able to tell. At least you should first enjoy what you're doing that is how I approach my life. And so far it has turned out well. Like I said, probably I could have got there much earlier, but I don't regret.
So one thing I'd like to ask about failing is, like, you started a startup and you definitely had a lot of ambitions and there was a lot of passion behind doing that startup. And just shutting it down might seem like devastating for some people, especially when you have such a good background, like you're from IIT or from an IIM and you're doing so good in life. And then after that, failing at a startup just because you don't get some funding, just because the investors are not, getting your idea that well. So how did you cope up with this failure? And can you tell us this phase of your life where you felt, how were you feeling at that time?
So actually during my IIT prep days, I was, expecting a much better rank than I got. And that was the biggest disappointment I ever faced in my life. I said, oh, I was expecting a rank below 500, where did I end up, and etc. But once that is done, right, you read a lot of books and etc., your philosophy and bent of mind changes. But after that episode, right, after a lot of worrying and etc., you still did not get the result you wanted. I stopped taking things seriously. Nothing else mattered. You try, you fail, you move on, you do something else in life. That one big, I wouldn't call it a failure even now, but that one big disappointment at that point in time, it kind of made me thick-skinned. That in the long run, all these things don't matter. You just need to enjoy your life. And success is only a byproduct of that life. It is not the end goal. The end goal is only enjoying what you're doing. Never do anything that you're not enjoying, because just it'll lead to success. Because it is very difficult to enjoy success if you are not enjoying life in the first place. So my destination is always, will this make me happy? Am I happy doing this? And success, if it comes, is only a bonus. That is not my destination. So I don't care if someone else, you know, someone else got that, did what the investor wanted and got the funding. If someone else did something else and got a better job than me, if someone else did something else and got a better salary than me, these do not matter to me. And that the reason why that is because a big disappointment early on in life just made me thick-skinned. And that is a fantastic place to be. If you get a huge disappointment upfront, nothing else, you'll get so thick-skinned that nothing else will seem to matter. And you will not optimize and make your decisions based on, arey yaar, usko itna package mil raha hai, so I should take up this job, which I hate, but I want to be known as the topper with the highest package in my badge. And so you will not take suboptimal decisions to please your peer group or neighbors or Sharma uncles and some other aunties and etc. So, if, again, the impact of what society perceives of you, if you minimize it to the absolute zero, I think you'll enjoy life and you'll, that is all that matters. Success is only a byproduct of it.
Excellent. That was an empowering thing that you just talked about. And I loved your, you know, aspect about failure and your life.
You told before the interview that you won't talk about any advices or something, but I think this was the, like, the most philosophical thing a fourth year guy can hear right now.
Yeah. So I was not expecting such an amazing interview, but I thought that you might be just another person who's, you know, great at exams and has this kind of a life. But with this perspective, I think you might be the best person that has come onto the interview yet, as of yet. And I really had fun in connecting with you. And thanks for being such a great alumni.
I would just thank you for your inviting me, and I had a great fun talking to you. I just want to say one thing. I know that SS reminds me that I told I'll not give any advices, but I do want to give one advice.
Yeah, sure.
One thing I felt I should have done a bit more is that in 4 years of time, right, when you had so much free time and etc., because exams and all, like we all know, we study like 4 or 5 days before and we do it well. The remaining time you are just chit-chatting about random stuff and movies and etc. and etc. That is a very important part of life. I enjoyed the most. I had random discussions about whether Salman Khan is better or Shah Rukh Khan is better, umpteen number of times. Whether Rahul Dravid is better or Sachin Tendulkar is better, umpteen number of times. Whether Telugu movies are better or Hindi movies are better, umpteen number of times. Pointless discussions running through all 4 years.
Yeah.
So, and that is important, because again, those are the memories you remember, right? You will not remember how much you scored in digital communications and etc. So while that is important, I felt that when you had access to high speed internet and all sorts of facilities and etc., I felt I could have not wasted as much time as I did and learned a bit more about things that actually interested me. I felt that would have given me, that would have saved a lot of my time, and I could have moved ahead. Like I said, I don't regret it. It's not that it's the end of it. But with the facilities that you have in campus and with internet at your disposal, apart from watching porn or downloading movies and etc., if you actually manage to read up stuff that is of importance to you or which you think you'll enjoy. For example, I always had a fascination towards financial markets. But the first time I started reading about it is after I got out of IMA. Now, why didn't I do it in IMA? Okay, you might say, oh, the workload was very high, I didn't do it. But I always had this fascination right from 12th to when I was 12 years old. Why didn't I do it in IIT Roper? I had all the time. I had internet. I had everything. I was watching movies. I was watching movies 4 movies a day. I was watching the same movie 10 times a day. We were downloading porn. We were downloading everything. But why didn't I read about financial markets? I could have started much earlier, right? Or why didn't I read about something else? I'm not saying you develop interests that you don't have. But some of these which you have, you tend to miss and say in the enjoying phase of life. I think that if you dedicate one thing and say, okay, at least for this thing, apart from academics, apart from the bakchodi I do on campus, I'll dedicate this one thing to learn a new skill set, which I'm anyway already interested in. Not for the sake of CV. not for the sake of career, purely because I'm interested, I'll do this. I think that will help you have a great head start. Even if you didn't, even if you don't, that is not the end of the world, because I think I'm doing quite well, all right. But I think with all the time you waste, one wastes on campus, I think 1 hour a day is not very difficult. Again, that's not an advice, that's a suggestion. Even if you don't do it, you will still, it will still not be materially different where you'll end up in 60 years time. But yeah, that is something I wanted to say.
Okay, so that is all. Thank you for being here. Thank you for giving such an amazing interview. And I'd definitely like to stay in touch with you for more further questions and clarity about just all the things that you have done.
Sure. And I'm happy to connect with not just Ehsas and you, but with any other alumni who wants to get in touch with me for whatever. I wouldn't say help, but guidance. I can give in my inputs. But like I always say, the decision has to be taken by the other person. I'll not tell him what to do, but I can give my experiences. If he or she, I'll be happy to do that. And it has been great talking to you. And thank you for accommodating my request to do it today and not tomorrow.
Okay, thank you. That's thank you very much.
Yeah. Thanks a lot, Sriram.